It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed of the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Larry. How are we doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. And you?
I am living the dream.
Sounds like a great day to talk about, guess what? Mutual funds.
Did you know the Cubs won the World Series?
Who?
Exactly. You know what Cubs used to stand for?
What?
Completely useless by September. We can't say that anymore.
Can't say that anymore. It took them 108 years, but you know, it's that you got to be determined.
It's the long-term perspective, like we do with investing.
Exactly. You got to have a plan. They had a plan. They just didn't execute very well.
Until now. Last night.
Till now.
But want to give a shout out to the principal over at Good Shepherd. I know he's a huge Cubs fan. So much so that he had an air horn going today as we were dropping kids off at school. And I did tell him that it was nice to have them at the championship table. You know, we've been there 11 times, so it was nice to have someone else there finally.
Yeah, well, it's finally 11-1, you know. And something about the shirts he tweeted out?
Yeah, anything? He sent out a text this morning that he was allowing the kids to wear Cubs shirts.
Cubs shirts.
So. I immediately replied saying that our Cardinals children will not be wearing Cubs.
Yeah.
But congratulations on the championship.
Blue and red don't mix.
I also want to put a shout out to my lovely wife. It is our anniversary today.
Happy anniversary to you.
14 years she has put up with me.
Wow.
Four children, 14 years, and she's still married to me.
That is an accomplishment.
So we have a contract now for 20 more years. And then after that, and the kids are out of the house and all that, we'll go year to year.
Well, you'll almost be caught up with me by then. Give or take.
So anyway, happy anniversary, honey. Love you. Thanks for putting up with me.
Thank you. That's all we have for today.
That's all, folks.
That's all, folks. That's all I write. So mutual fund fees. This all ties into the new Department of Labor fiduciary rule, which may or may not be taking effect next April 10th of 2017. But there are, regardless, a lot of companies and a lot of people who feel it will be taking effect at least next year or within the next couple of years, because the broker-dealers of the world are making decisions now in the 6 or 7 months they have left that will forever impact our industry and how we work with clients on satisfying their needs for their financial plan.
That's right. We talked about mutual fund fees and how advisors are compensated and so forth in a previous episode. But with the fiduciary rule being implemented as of April 17th, is that correct? April 17th next
April
year?
10th.
April 10th, 2017. That's where the 17 came from. Okay, back on track here. A lot of investors who have a broker or even have a registered investment advisor as their advisor are going to see some changes going on, and they may be a little confused. So what we wanted to do was revisit this topic, but then apply it to the new fiduciary rule that was passed this past April, and help people understand, here's what's going on, here's how it could impact you, here's what you may be seeing from your broker-dealer firm and so forth. So you're ready for it and you understand what's going on.
We're going to try and explain, if that's possible, how things are currently doing, how they're working today, and how they may be working next year. But I guess the biggest takeaway I'll give you right now is if you have, and hopefully you do, have a financial planner, broker-dealer, advisor, representative, whatever you want to call them, who is assisting you in choosing investments and making long-term plans for your future, is make an appointment now, because they may not even know what's going to happen. But I know I spoke to a doctor friend recently, and he is with one of the larger companies in St. Louis. We won't mention any names.
And would that be Edward Jones?
It might be.
Okay.
And his rep recently said that, and I quote, he may not be able to work with him anymore. And the physician was, why not? And the other individual was, because of the regulatory changes. So we're going to dive in a little bit into the weeds today to try and explain what currently is happening in mutual fund and annuity accounts and what will be permitted under the new regulation. And then it will be up to, believe it or not, every broker-dealer or registered investment advisor organization to determine how their representatives are going to be allowed to fulfill the rule. So it's not up to the individual representative. It's up to the FINRA licensed or state regulated registered investment advisory firm to determine what they will allow and will not allow in order to comply with the rule.
And I have an article here that talked about a couple companies and how there are have already said they're going to address it going forward, and we'll touch on that. But before we do, let's define a mutual fund. What is a mutual fund, Larry?
Well, a mutual fund, as they were developed in the early 1900s, is a method. It's a pooled account, and it's a method of allowing investors to share the investment of multiple companies. So the risk of investing in only one company, and I'll go back for those of you who remember to Enron, for example, where people owned only Enron stock when it was going up, it was great. When they filed bankruptcy, it was worthless. So if you owned 100% of Enron in your portfolio, then you were not a happy camper. But if Enron was one of 100 or 200 different stocks that a mutual fund owned, it works the same with bonds, a particular bond of a municipality or state or institution, whatever, is one of maybe 100 or 200 or even more bonds within a mutual fund. If it is an open-ended mutual fund, then you have the ability of redeeming your shares on a day-to-day basis. There is an unlimited number of investors that are allowed to participate in, and that's the most common type, is open-end mutual funds. If it is a closed-end mutual fund, then you're limited. You may or may not have a market for what you have at any point in time, depending on who's interested in buying your share, because it is limited as to how many people can actually invest in a closed-end mutual fund.
Right. And then with regards to fees on a mutual fund, every fund has an expense ratio. That is what is paid to the manager of the account, who's managing the different stocks or bonds or whatever it may be. For you, the average expense ratio, and this was an article from Investment News, is about 1.2%. Now, there are share classes of mutual – well, let's first – there's load and no load. A no load mutual fund, you don't pay any sort of commission, whether it's upfront, back end, or whatever, and we'll get into that part of it. So you're just paying the expense ratio. A lot of registered investment advisors will use no-load mutual funds and then charge you an asset-based fee to manage that portfolio of mutual funds for you. What we're going to be focusing on today more so is the loaded mutual fund and breakpoints and how they work. And I have a piece here from FINRA. I think, Larry, you printed off the same piece. Great minds think alike.
I did.
So there essentially are the big three, the A, B, and C share classes of mutual funds.
Sounds original.
It is. The A share, you pay the commission or the load up front. And typically, if you're investing less than $25,000, that's 5%. If you're investing between $25,000 and $50,000, that's 4.25. And then it works its way down where if you invest $1 million or more, there is no load.
Which is considered NAV to the investors, so they're not paying a front-end charge.
Correct. The average expense, and I was kind of shocked at how high these numbers still are, but as we'll talk about later, we're going to see these expenses come down. The A-share average expense is about 1.24%. The average expense for a B-share, which is a back-end load, so you don't pay any commission up front, But when you go to sell your mutual fund at the end, that's where you pay your commission. The B share average expense is about 1.75%. And then the C share, where you don't pay a commission, but the expense ratio is much higher. As long as you don't sell it within 12 months, I think there's like a 1% fee. I don't have any
C shares. It's a 1% redemption charge on most C shares if it is sold within 12 months of purchase.
Okay. That's why I have Larry here. He has all the details for me. The C share is 1.98% average expense ratio.
And you know why it's 1.9? Because the registered investment advisor is getting paid 1%.
Wow.
So you figure 1% on whatever is invested is paid annually to the registered representative on those types of accounts. So the difference, and maybe I'm jumping ahead here, John. Sorry if I am, but
go for it.
The main difference I see between the no load and load funds are basically not only the fees, but also the advice you get. Because with no load funds, you really don't get much advice today. So if you are comfortable, capable, and willing to do it, as they say, on your own, then no-load funds will certainly give you a lower cost than front-end loaded funds, which I will add vary quite a bit by fund family in the way that they charge and how much they charge. So,
and your no-load fund, if you're working with an advisor on that, they're charging and maybe charging 1% on the first X dollars that you invest with them to manage that portfolio. So it's not, I mean, for us in the industry, obviously we have families, this is our career, you know, we have to get paid. And whether you get paid by using a mutual fund that's low, has a load to it, or you get paid by using a mutual fund that doesn't have a load, but then you're paying an advisory fee, at the end of the day, it probably is pretty close to being a wash.
There's no free coffee, John.
No, there isn't. I thought that was Keynesian theory, there's no free lunch, but you're going with the coffee?
I'm going with the coffee.
Are we going to talk about them already?
Let's do that.
Okay.
Today, we are revisiting. We're some of our favorites, I'll say, over the past, believe it or not, number of months since we went on air in July. Believe that?
No, we're close to 20 episodes already.
Pretty darn close. Snickerdoodle is the one that we're looking at today and tasting. It's the original award-winning Snickerdoodle. It's the best-selling coffee that they have at the Chef Shop, of course. It's blended. It has spicy flavors of cinnamon and hazelnut for smooth, aromatic coffee. Chef Shop is sponsoring us. We appreciate that. Thanks to Scott and to Nancy. They're located in Edwardsville. The Gourmet Kitchen Store, there at the Schnucks Plaza next to Target, 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, Illinois, 62025. Phone number 618-659-9840. And I do like cinnamon. I do like hazelnut. And it's a pretty darn good coffee.
We can see who won the argument as far as who went first on their favorites. As everyone knows who has listened to the show, I am not a hazelnut fan.
Really?
Really. But the Snickerdoodle is a nice, smooth cup of coffee.
It is pretty good.
If we could remove the hazelnut, it would be perfect.
That's a different one, I think, John.
So, getting back to how advisors are compensated, it could be through a fee based on assets under management using ETFs or no-load mutual funds, or it could be through a commissionable product where you pay a sales load. How this will impact investors as we move forward, especially when it relates to retirement accounts, IRAs, and so forth, is going to be drastic. The new fiduciary rule is going to really hit hard on variable compensation, which what these loads are. And I've already read that Edward Jones has said that they are they're going to stop offering mutual funds in retirement accounts. That they said, you know, we're just not doing it. We're not going to deal with this. Charles Schwab has stopped selling loaded funds, according to this article from Investopedia, written by Roger Wallner. And LPL is going to make sure that it's a level commission that's paid to brokers. That's how they're going to address this.
Well, and I'm going to digress for a moment. One of the pitfalls of mutual fund shares is how the broker treats the individual investor when they're dealing with a suitability standard, because...
Oh, I thought you said, like, you're going to give them a hug or something.
Yeah, well, that hug or... Well, never mind. what often happens, or sometimes happens, is in the effort to diversify a portfolio, a broker will invest in multiple mutual fund families. So they may have a large cap with fund A and a small cap with B and a bond fund with C, et cetera, et cetera. The downside to that is you are giving up what are called, as we're talking about, breakpoints. If you have a lot of investments in a lot of different mutual fund families, you never are able to reach the appropriate breakpoint level, which will reduce the upfront charge that you are charged on your account. So in that case, you may, I specify may, not be in your best interest, maybe suitable, but not in your best interest, because you're giving up a lot of money paying higher charges on the fund fees than you would have to if you had them all in one fund family.
So if I had $100,000 and my broker put me in eight different fund families at $25,000 a pop, I'm going to pay 5%.
That's $200,000. But that's okay.
Oh, that's what I meant. Sorry. Yep. My math is off. I need some more snickerdoodle.
Yes, you do.
So if I had four mutual funds at $25,000 a pop, that would be $100,000 total investment. But because the broker put me in four different fund families, I'm paying 5% on that transaction.
In lieu of 3.25%, which is what you would be paying if you had $100,000 invested with one fund family.
Okay. That
big difference.
That is a big difference.
Big difference. 3.25.
I'm not doing any more math today.
1.7. You giving up on it? You know, it's almost 2% difference, 1.75% difference. So figure that's on your investment. That's $2,000 a year almost that you're paying in excess in fees.
Hmm.
And that really is part of the driving force behind the DOL fiduciary rule, because they are far and wide between different portfolios. As different companies invest, they try and make the determination that in order to be properly diversified, not every fund family has the best fund in each category, which is a reasonably true statement. So therefore, they justify multiple fund families, but you can't get breakpoints. So therefore, that becomes a big issue because you're paying a lot more money than you should.
Oh, I thought the fiduciary rule was because the government wanted to take over the financial sector.
Well, there's that too.
Okay. Okay.
Let's say what they claim and what they don't claim.
Mm-hmm.
So on your portfolio, if you're in a lot of different mutual funds, it bears to ask, and a lot of times you can look on a statement, it'll have an A behind the mutual fund symbol or the name if it's an A share. It'll have a C if it's a C share. And just keep in mind, in general, A shares can be justified, I guess, if you will, in some cases for long-term investing, particularly buy and hold strategy, because once you've paid the upfront fee, then your ongoing charges are going to be significantly less than they would be in a B or C class. And some fund companies have actually dropped B shares altogether.
That's a great segue, because I think – so for the investor, for the average guy out there, average gal out there, what does all this mean? What's going to happen? In this article, I read that there was one company that had 14 different share classes.
Wow.
I would lose track of all that.
It used to be only three, and that was tough to keep track of.
So what? And Larry and I have met with different people. We've talked with a lot of different companies and how they're talking about addressing this. What we're going to see is expense ratios coming down.
True.
I think you're going to see a new share class created for IRAs and so forth, because you're not going to be able to use these products in them.
Loaded products are gone and no loads are gone.
And we're going to see a lot of these share classes that exist going away, which is good news because it has gotten crazy. Even, you know, the world that I live in servicing 401ks, there are like 9 retirement share classes, and it becomes very difficult trying to figure out, well, why is this one different than that one and what's going on here? And I'm in the industry. So for the average investor out there, this is one good thing that will happen is fees will come down on the expense ratio. The commission on products will go away. It will be a level playing field. The advisor will have to work in your best interest. And we're going to see a lot of these share classes going away. Woohoo! Sounds great. Hold on. There are going to be some problems.
I'm holding.
There are going to be some problems that come with this change because I have a little example here. I am a registered investment advisor. Larry comes in to me and says, John, I have $50,000 to invest. I would like to invest it with you. What can we do? If I go the route of using, say, ETFs and then charge a 1% fee.
Exchange-traded funds for those.
Thank you. What was I saying?
1% fee.
1% fee. That's $500 for me as an advisor. In all honesty, $500 to manage an account where I have fiduciary liability and so forth isn't worth it. So for that the investor that doesn't have $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 to invest, there's a good chance, and it's an IRA, there's a good chance that they're going to have a really hard time finding an advisor that will work with them because what used to work is if I put you in a diversified portfolio of A shares within a fund family, I would be paid, call it 4.25% for my services, which is
Couple grand,
which is more than the $500 I would have gotten as a registered investment advisor. And that may be a little bit more palatable for me to take on that risk and work with you. That's going to go away. And that's one of the big arguments, clamors, whatever you want to call it, going on right now in the industry because the investor, we call it the little investor, not because of their height or anything like that, but because they don't have a sizable portfolio, meaning $500,000 or more, and they're going to have a real hard time finding an advisor to work with.
Yeah, we're not talking about those who are vertically challenged.
Okay. I'm follically challenged and Larry's vertically challenged.
Hey, watch
we it. Are challenged.
We are challenged, right? No, you're exactly right, John. And one of the outcomes of this issue likely will be anyone who doesn't have, again, pick a number, 250, 500,000, a million, whatever it is, doesn't have that kind of level of asset to invest, is going to be forced into a new realm of using what we not so fondly call robo-advisors. There are a lot of institutions out there that are introducing computer-based models where you will sign on as an investor and you'll fill out some kind of questionnaire that will help allegedly determine what type of investments you should be using based on your risk tolerance, time horizon, and goals and objectives. And I guess that's okay. Then you will invest, allegedly, as the computer tells you to invest. I'm not sure that that's something.
That's personalized service there.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's something that my clients would be comfortable with because now you and everybody else who happen to answer the questions the same way are going to be invested exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that that satisfies the needs of most of our clients.
And that's something that will be lost. You know, working with an advisor, I always tell people, you know, all right, fill out this questionnaire, fill out the risk tolerance questionnaire, come back, we'll sit down, we'll talk about this. And when I go through that risk tolerance with them, I would say at least 70% of the time we're changing things around because we are terrible self-evaluators. And I always see people err more towards the side of being aggressive, which is dangerous. Because if it ends up that you're plugging into a robo-advisor and you ended up with a more aggressive portfolio than you were expecting, we're going to have serious issues and potential litigation down the road. But when you sit down with an advisor and they're looking at you and they're reading your face expressions and they're asking you questions, well, you know, it's easy to say I can take this much risk. All right, what happens if you get your quarterly statement and you're down $10,000? Well, no. Well, okay, well, then this answer probably shouldn't be a 9. It should be more like a 3 or 4. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Well, and typically what I find, as I know you do too, John, when they fill out that questionnaire, as they are pretty much now, when markets are up, people are really aggressive. They're like, man, yeah, we want to be out there. We want to take it all away. And as soon as we get into a bear market situation, that same investor filling out the same form, all of a sudden, they're not so aggressive. So using the example that John did is, you know, I call it the sleep factor, or being able to live with, if you will, the results of your portfolio, or to listen to the advice of your advisor. You know, if your portfolio is $500,000, are you willing in the next downturn to see a number that's maybe $100,000 less?
Good example. It reminds me when I was living in Texas and was working with a tech company, I had a gentleman come in, and this is when the tech bubble was probably at its peak, getting ready to burst, as they say. He wanted to buy Qualcomm.
Oh, wow.
And I looked at him and said, do you know how long it would take for this company to, for the PE, for you to reap the benefits of what you're paying in a premium with the, looking at the PE ratio? Probably 6 months later, whatever it was, the bubble burst, everything fell. I called him up. I said, hey, we can get into Qualcomm. It's a pretty good price now. He goes, well, why would I want to do it now? It's down. And I'm scratching my head going, investing is very counterintuitive. And what Larry said is very true. You know, people want to get in when everything's good, but when it gets bad, that's when the rubber meets the road, if you will.
Human nature.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest ally and biggest enemy of the investor in how they go about it. It has to be systematic. John, I think we might have to go two shows on this subject. I've got lots of examples rolling around in my mind right now. We're just not going to get to it in this segment. I will.
I know, you know, you're older now, so you need to write things down.
Yeah. But on the break point, so the thing you really need to watch for, what share class are you really in? I have a lot of investors that come in, and I'll ask them, you know, well, why are you in C shares? I don't know. Or why are you in A shares? Well, I don't know. Do you know how they work? Nope. Well, you really ought to dig in a little deeper, and I think that's our job as a investment advisor to make sure our clients are well-educated. I would rather have a well-educated client than not anytime, because they are more attuned to listen to the advice and hopefully follow it because they understand it. With breakpoints, they're just going away under the fiduciary rule. You know, the mutual funds are currently working with their attorneys and their CFAs, their fund advisor people, to determine what share classes they're going to use in the future. Some classes, I know I had a call from a investment advisor with another broker-dealer out there yesterday, and they've been informed that they have until December 31st of this year to move all of their retirement plans from currently a commission-based platform to a fee-based platform. You know, it's no ifs, ands, buts, or ors.
Pay the commission, and now they're going to have to pay.
Well, and that is an issue. You know, that's one of the issues under the new rule is how you determine that an individual is invested properly and that the fees are, quote-unquote, reasonable for someone in that particular situation.
So to recap real quick, what can you, the average investor, expect? If you're working with a broker-dealer, you're probably going to get some kind of notice, if you already haven't gotten a notice, that things are going to change with your IRA. You're going to see commissionable share classes going away. You're going to see more fee-based, level fee-based, asset-based, fee-based advice being offered. And if you're a smaller investor, you may not have an advisor. Now, there's obviously a lot more that we'll talk about on the next episode, but to kind of recap where we are right now with the show that we just wrapped up today, I think that's a decent summary. Anything to add?
Know how you're investing. It's your money. It's your future. It's your decision. If you're not comfortable with those who you are working with, talk to several, because it has to be, they have to be compatible with you and vice versa. There have been occasions that I have, after doing an interview and working with a new potential investor, suggested that he or she might be better served somewhere else.
And we also have, once we get the website done, the podcast for our, we did a show on how to evaluate an advisor. And that's a good starting point to listen to that. We had a lot of ideas on what people should be doing.
And that will be coming up here soon. Yeah, how to choose your financial advisor, what to ask So that would be a great show to go back and listen to. And like I say, within 30 days, we hope to have those podcasts up on our website. We'll keep you posted on that. Thanks to WSIE, Steve Jankowski, everybody here for having us on board. We hope it is educational. We're providing some useful information to you, our listening audience. We're looking for questions. If you have any, send them to llexo@nickelfinancial.com or jgraney@nickelfinancial.com. We'll be happy to address those on the air. There will be a lot more to come on this, particularly after the election next week. We'll see if
Everything we talked about may not even.
We'll see if
it's meaningless.
It will happen, in my opinion.
I agree,
but it may be postponed until 2018, 2019. Who knows? Which may not be a bad thing, since all of the industry is scrambling to figure out how the heck we're going to comply with all these change regulations. So. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
We will be in touch at that particular point.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to john@jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to larry@llexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.